RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Brian Hooker, PhD, is a Senior Director of Science and Research at Children's Health Defence and Professor Emeritus Biology at Simpson University in Redding, California. The breadth of his over 60 science and engineering papers have been published in internationally recognized peer-reviewed journals. He's the author of Vax, Unvax, Let the Science Speak, and we interviewed him on that last year. He's been active in the autism community since 2001 and has a son with autism. In 2013 and 14, he worked with CDC whistleblower Dr. William Thompson to expose fraud and corruption within vaccine safety research in the CDC, which led to the release of over 10,000 pages of documents. And Children's Health Defence is a non-profit organisation. Its mission is to end childhood health epidemics by working aggressively to eliminate harmful exposures, hold those responsible accountable, and establish safeguards to prevent future harm. It fights corruption, mass surveillance, and censorship that puts profits before people and advocates for worldwide rights to health, freedom, and bodily autonomy. And Brian Hooker, PhD, is back with us on RCR. Brian, good to have you back again. It's been a while. I think September last year was when we chatted first up.
Absolutely. And I enjoyed it and appreciate being back, Paul.
Okay. I want to read from some of the testimony you gave, I think, before the Health Committee in the House of Representatives for Washington State back in 2019 regards measles. I mean, there's a lot more to what you said than what I'm just about to say, but it sets the scene. There's a problem with measles in Washington State, but it's not low vaccination rates. It's actually high vaccination rates with a vaccine product unable to provide lifetime immunity or vigorous passive maternal protection to infants during the first year of life. So how dangerous are the measles and what do the numbers say?
The measles is a garden variety infection that, you know, back in the 1960s and 50s and even through the 1970s, measles was sort of a part of childhood and a rite of passage in childhood. And it is not a serious illness. The mortality of measles within measles cases was about 2 in 10,000 cases before the vaccine was introduced in the United States in 1963. So it was an extremely low mortality disease. And you would expect that with modern advances in medicine, that if measles were allowed to run its course, the mortality would be even much lower today. So it's very benign. You treat measles with vitamin A. That is, you know, that's very, very well known. Although with so few circulating measles cases, in the United States, in New Zealand, in the world, then there is no real natural immunity to measles anymore, except for individuals that may have been old enough to have the disease in childhood.
I think that's me.
There you go.
Because I remember getting it. We used to have, I've mentioned this to the listeners before, we used to have, well, my parents and their friends used to have parties to try and get us altogether, so we get it done out of the way. And there's no, you know, scary childhood memory of that for me. I can tell you that.
No, it's not. It's not a scary disease. It is. I think that we appropriately call it an infection. And there is even evidence that measles infection in childhood is preventative against certain forms of cancer later on in life. And they actually use the measles virus in the treatment of certain forms of brain cancer. It's an experimental treatment, but it has been done. And so, you know, when the public health authorities pull this out and talk about measles being the boogeyman, they couldn't be further from the truth, because again, it is a mild, benign illness. In the United States, there was a show that was very popular called The Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch got the measles. I don't, you know, they may have shown that in New Zealand or not, but it's kind of interesting because several years back they pulled that episode because.
Oh. Okay.
You cannot get that episode of the Brady Bunch anymore because the public health authorities decided that they wanted to censor that information. And, you know, Jan Brady, I think, no. at some point in the show is saying, you know, boy, if you want to, you know, stay home from school, you can't beat the measles.
Okay. Well, that's, what's the word? That's a bit dark, isn't it?
Yes.
Calling an episode. My golly. Wow. That is censorship.
Yes. Yeah. It's very extreme, and you know the waning immunity of the MMR vaccine, which is you know the vaccine that is distributed pretty much worldwide for the against the measles, mumps, and rubella, is a faulty vaccine and a leaky vaccine at best. And many of those individuals that have gotten measles in these outbreaks are actually up to date on their vaccinations, you know, and, you know, many times there isn't a strain match between the measles strain that is the vaccine protects against versus the strain of measles that might be circulating. And so the vaccine leaks, or in other words, it creates a scenario where it doesn't give durable immunity. And the immunity in adulthood actually wanes.
Versus natural immunity, how long lasting is that?
Natural immunity is against the entire virus. It's against the entire disease. That durable immunity is not just antibodies, which is what vaccines will produce in their appropriate response, but it includes antibodies, it includes T cells, it includes innate immunity, and all of that is lifelong if you've been exposed to and contracted a measles infection.
Here's another one of those, I can't work out why they would do that questions. Why ignore all that and go with a leaky vaccine that wanes? It makes no sense, does it?
It makes absolutely no sense. We've painted ourselves into a corner with sort of this vaccine industrial complex. Vaccines are big business. They make a lot of money. In the United States, the sales of measles vaccines through the MMR vaccine are about $100 million a year, approaching, depending on, you know, if you can stoke the fear in an outbreak, and there have been reported measles cases this year also in the United States, which they use to stoke the fear. So you can get that up to about $500 million or even $1 billion if you start to get the population in this, you know, spun up in this fear and going out and getting needless boosters.
I want to get your view on this. There's a new setup here in New Zealand called the New Zealand Public Health Communications Centre. It's led by one of the chief, I would call, COVID cheerleaders, a Dr. Michael Baker. It's a new job for him. And he says this regards measles as of right now. The number of children susceptible to measles in New Zealand is growing. We're close to the number that triggered previous measles epidemics here. Alongside improving infant immunization coverage, we urge three immediate actions to prevent another epidemic, and they list those. But basically, they recommend closing the immunity gap and reducing the risk of importing measles. And also, a recent development is the government have come out and said that they're going to incentivize medical practices in vaccination, including MMR, and that they're going for a target of 95%. As you hear what I've just said, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that the rate of autism will increase in New Zealand because of this. The MMR vaccine, you know, despite what the talking heads, despite what the authorities have said, the US CDC, Centers for Disease Control, covered up the relationship between the timing of the MMR vaccine and autism in both African-American males, as well as in what we call regressive autism, which regressive autism is about 80% of all autism cases. And so it is a strong environmental factor regarding the cause of autism. And, you know, you can't get around it. I've published it several times. There have been other individuals that have published this. You look at the data, you look at the research, you even pick apart the CDC's own studies and you'll find their fatal flaws. And when those fatal flaws are corrected, then you get more autism. You also get more gut disease. And measles vaccine has been associated with not only gut dysbiosis, but autoimmune disorders such as Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, ileitis. All of that has been associated with the measles vaccine, and that was quietly affirmed in some of Dr. Andrew Wakefield's early work, where, you know, he wasn't talking about autism, but he was talking about the presence of gastrointestinal issues due to the measles vaccine. And so you're hurting kids by doing this. And one of the things that does happen, and we found there is a significant relationship, is the earlier a child gets vaccinated, the more susceptible they are to getting an autism diagnosis later. And, you know, it's not good to give a child a live virus vaccine young, yet some parents will go out and convince their practitioners that, oh my goodness, my baby needs a measles vaccine because this measles epidemic is going on. And those children will get a measles vaccine at 6 months of age, which is just preposterous.
6 months, yeah. Two words jumped out, autism and Crohn's. I know there were more on the list, but it occurred to me that it's my impression, and I'm sort of just nudging 60 now, that there has been a big increase in both of those in the time since I was a kid. Is that correct?
Absolutely, it's correct. In the United States, the rate of autism has increased over, we're looking at one in 10,000, one in 5,000 in the 1970s. And now in 2024, it's one in 36, which I think is an underestimate of the actual autism epidemic. The rate of Crohn's disease used to be about one to two children. This is among children in 10,000. Now we're looking at a rate of Crohn's disease in children that is getting as high as 1 to 2%. So instead of one or two in 10,000, we have one or two in 100. And the pharmaceutical industry is laughing its way to the bank because they have all of these biologics that are very, very expensive to use that they're using now on Crohn's disease, things like Humira, things like Stelara, that bring in huge, huge levels of insurance reimbursement. And these biologics are being used by larger and larger portions of the populations. And yes, they are approved for pediatric populations because we're seeing, you know, these Crohn's disease cases just sort of climb out of the woodwork from nowhere.
Well, it's obvious, isn't it, then? It's pretty obvious.
All right.
Unless someone's got another explanation. I want to get your view on this. Very recently here, there was an Immunization Advisory Center webinar. It was last week, actually. They specifically mentioned the fact that they will not do serology to determine immunity, it is presumed, even though they also acknowledge that there is waning over time, as we've already talked about, specifically for the mumps component. Why not do a serology test?
It's so easy to do a titers test to see if somebody is producing antibodies for the mumps. It is a very, very simple test that can be done, and it's a simple test that can be done on children. It is done all the time. And the mumps vaccine, you know, there is a movie that's just very recently been released in the United States called Protocol 7. It talks about how the mumps efficacy, the mumps vaccine efficacy is about 50%. And so, you know, half of the children that receive it don't really have any durable immunity at all. But if anything, it actually delays the mumps. Because the immunity wanes so quickly that instead of being a disease in childhood, we're now seeing outbreaks at college campuses. And mumps is much more of a serious disorder when it is contracted in older children, adolescents, and adults. It can cause sterility. It causes swelling of the testes and the ovaries, in both males and females. And it can cause sterility, especially in males. And so, you know, it becomes this issue where, titers are not enough. We encourage anybody to avoid the MMR vaccine as much as possible. And titers gives them, you know, if they've been exposed to the mumps, if they've had the mumps, titers gives them an option. You know, there are some practitioners in the United States that, regardless of whether you've had the mumps, they'll give you the MMR vaccine again.
What does that do? Because I heard during COVID that you don't vaccinate people who have the thing. Well, they've got the thing. The same applies, I guess, is it?
It does. The same does apply. It's redundant. And whenever you stress the immune system and in a particular direction, it focuses the immune system on that particular antigen, that particular disease. And you may have immunity to that particular disease, but what we're finding in my research, and I look at vaccinated versus unvaccinated children all the time, is that the more you vaccinate and the more you over-vaccinate that child, the more their immunity to other things wanes. Their innate immune response to things like colds, things like respiratory infections, things like bronchitis, becomes more and more damaged as they go along. And we're seeing that not only in child populations because of the bloated vaccine schedule in so many countries, but now with, you know, the road 20 years to nowhere boosters on COVID-19, we're seeing that in adult populations where they're coming down with more infections that are not related to vaccination, but are, you know, susceptible to do things like put them in the hospital.
I want to get your comment on this regarding exemptions. What's the situation in the US? Are exemptions easily available? Are they limited? Are pediatricians prevented from issuing them? What, by threat of being dragged before the medical council or whatever the body is if they issue too many? What's your perspective on that?
That's a really good question. And I live in one of the states that has the most draconian laws regarding exemptions to vaccination. There are 5 states in the United States that offer no personal belief or no religious exemption to vaccines. So you can't opt out on religious or bodily autonomy or any other type of personal belief. The only exemption that's available in California, the state where I live in, is the medical exemption. But yet when medical exemptions are issued by pediatricians and other practitioners, then the medical board will start to go after those practitioners. So many of the practitioners that used to give medical exemptions in the state of California are now in fear and trepidation because they have these myriad complaints that are, you know, raised against them by non-patients, not their patients, but other practitioners that are in cahoots with the medical board. And they will, you know, they basically persecute and torture these practitioners until they can no longer give medical exemptions. So it's nigh unto impossible to opt out of a vaccination in states like California, states like New York, Maine, Connecticut, and West Virginia.
All right, here, our national immunization register has been merged with the COVID immunization register, the COVID-19 register, to create an all-encompassing immunization register. The two databases, the separate databases, will cease to exist to be used for tracking vaccination. And the interesting thing here is, with that, your children's names cannot be removed from the register. That's the change. Now, why would they do that?
They want to make sure that they can keep track of these individuals for later vaccinations. You know, the child vaccination schedule is very, very bloated, but the new frontier is the adult vaccination schedule. And so now we've got things coming down the pike like bird flu, H5N1 influenza, you know, where certain countries are going to start vaccinating specific populations, you know, even though this is really a non-issue or a non-problem. But they're wanting to keep these records and keep the roles of these children to the place where, no, you cannot remove them. We have something very similar in California. I don't think it's quite as onerous, but it flies in the face of privacy laws, which much of the COVID response did anyway, You know, those of us that required testing if we weren't vaccinated, every time I tested in public on my university campus, I was giving away my vaccination status, and they did it very publicly. So it flies in the face of privacy, but also it creates a registry that when the new vaccines come down the pike, you know, when it comes time for the, you know, redoing things like the HPV vaccine or adult vaccinations, including things like Tdap boosters, including things like adding to the schedule the COVID-19 vaccine, the yearly influenza shot, then when they can keep track of these individuals and they can hammer away at them. Merely because these, you know, these government officials, the practitioners are being incentivized by pharma.
Also added to that, the New Zealand Public Health Communication Centre, I referred to them earlier, are calling for even proof of vaccination to get into our country. So there's that. And I mentioned also the incentivizing of medical practices. Can you see a scenario where, well, obviously, you know, you're not going to travel too easily, but where, you know, someone could be denied treatment or access to medical services unless they have the right ticks in the right boxes? That's the slippery slope, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, when the World Health Organization was trying to get their treaty amendments approved here in late May, they called them health certificates, and they did. But really, it's just another word for vaccine passports. And so other countries, not only the World Health Organization, but other countries are responding by saying that you will have these certain vaccines to cross our borders. And then practitioners are saying that if you don't have these certain vaccines, we'll kick you out of the practice. There are people that are being denied, you know, organ transplants at hospitals right now because they didn't receive the COVID-19 vaccine.
It's happening here, Brian.
It's awful. You know, it's happening in the United States. It's happening in Canada. You know, it's happening, you know, in New Zealand, in Australia. So it is so beyond insidious that you would require an individual that, say, is on a heart transplant list to get a vaccination that is going to give them heart damage. It makes no sense from a medical perspective, from a healing perspective. But when you look at the incentivization and the amount of money that these individuals get per vaccinated individual, then it makes perfect sense.
Are we on the edge of some sort of precipice, do you think? I mean, COVID probably showed us, but you can see that this is this business model can be applied to a whole range of vaccinations and products, you know, downstream, like you mentioned. You know, it's all these treatments that suddenly become viable and marketable and saleable when you operate this system. Are we on the edge?
I do believe that. We, you know, we're at sort of this nexus in time where people are going to continually need to make the choice for bodily autonomy. And, you know, Anthony Fauci was recorded as saying, you know, if you can make people uncomfortable enough, they'll get vaccinated. Well, and there are some of us that haven't been vaccinated and haven't been vaccinating their children in so many years. We're like, bring it. It will become more uncomfortable, but there are more and more people, you know, Paul, that to me, it's so encouraging. They're waking up. They're seeing the fact that the vaccination schedule is bloated for no good reason. They're seeing the numerous side effects of the COVID-19 shot. And it's very, very difficult to find somebody, in society, in the developed world, that doesn't at least know one person that has died from the COVID-19 vaccine. You know, there's a long line of carnage in the middle of the pandemic. There was a researcher by the name of Mark Skidmore in Michigan State University in the U.S. who estimated that the death toll of the COVID-19 shot was somewhere between 280,000 to 300,000 individuals just in the United States. And so it's not difficult then to know, you know, 6 degrees of separation or whatever, know somebody that has died from the COVID-19 vaccine or died suddenly from pulmonary embolism or from ischemic stroke.
Yeah, we're seeing some, well, we had a guest on saying that the dam is breaking. I think the British Medical Journal, and then that was reported by the Telegraph newspaper a few days ago, right, as we're talking, which kind of let the cat out of the bag first time round for any consumer of mainstream news, well, in the UK, but around the world. That's a sign something's happening, isn't it?
That is a sign. And what I would expect that would happen would be the other side would ramp up the scare tactics. And that's exactly what they're, you know, doing with the pandemic du jour, which is H5N1 influenza or bird flu. Now the talking heads are coming out and saying that the mortality for this disease could be as high as 50%. Well, that number is based on people that have gotten bird flu directly from either birds or mammals, zoonotic, not human to human transmission. And it's only happened in the underserved world. Okay, so you would expect the mortality for, you know, this type of disease to be higher in the underserved world where they don't have access to treatments and drugs and, you know, things that would be effective for flu like chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine or even quinine when these people have gotten ill. And really, you know, the thing that scares me is that there are labs in the United States, there's at least five labs that are experimenting on this same variant of influenza that are doing gain-of-function experiments. We need to outlaw that thing. It needs to be completely outlawed because they are, their goal is to make this next pathogen human-to-human transmissible through aerosol lung droplets, and that is their intent. And, you know, even the former director of the CDC, Robert Redfield, has said, yeah, then disease X will be bird flu and it will be due to a lab leak and potentially a lab leak in the United States.
I guess the way you rationalize that is, okay, we produce pathogens through gain of function, they get out, but it's okay because then we make the rescue remedy. So that all balances up. I'm trying to think of something, you know, less sinister to say about that. But I guess there's a kind of logic, weird logic in that.
There is a weird logic in that when you look at the fact that Pfizer and Moderna alone made over $100 billion, with a B, dollars from the sale of COVID-19 shots. Okay, that doesn't account for all the COVID-19 shots in the world. That's just to manufacturers and distributors of COVID-19 vaccines. And now they're seeing that profit, those profits wane. And so they're getting ready for the next. It's like, you know, we've got this bloated appetite for money. So what is going to, you know, satisfy that bloated appetite? Well, let's bring on the next pandemic.
And that will be promoted or carried through the media. And there's a close association with the group I told you about earlier and the media. They really engage in the media. So people here are going to start seeing media material regards, let's get back to measles. What's right for our listeners who are pretty well on board with what we're talking about, but in the communications they have with relatives, friends, et cetera, as this ramps up, what filters should they advise people to apply, in your thinking anyway, to kind of, you know, get through the BS, let's say?
The biggest thing to do is to turn off your television and stop listening to the authorities. The government does not have your best interest at heart. They really don't, you know, and something I've been saying for years, even before COVID-19, never trust the government to tell you what to put in your body. You know, we experienced that through big pharma, through big sugar, through big food and big ag. You know, we eat food that is unadulterated crap. And we expect to survive. We seem to scratch our heads when our longevity rates are starting to go down. But yet, you know, we pile on the same crap and we are, you know, we're addicted to all these different prescription drugs, you know, in the United States and worldwide. And by the way, US and New Zealand are, you know, two of the only countries in the world that have direct-to-consumer drug advertising on television. Yeah. Directly on TV. And so, you know, and look at us and look at how much the United States spends on healthcare, but yet we're one of the least healthiest nations within the developed world. And so, you know, what the government is telling us to do ain't working. It's just absolutely not working, but for somebody it's working. And honestly, when you look at the individuals that were responsible for the last pandemic, you look at how, Tony Fauci, his income doubled. I'm sorry, his net worth doubled over the pandemic. It went from $6 million to about $12.8 million over the pandemic. Well, somebody's getting rich off of this, but, you know, and you know, now Dr. Fauci might say, well, mea culpa, but we're not having Nuremberg 2. We're not, you know, looking at the things that he said and actually analyzing, you know, what he said and why he said them. But yet, you know, they're getting richer and these countries are getting sicker. There is just absolutely no doubt about it.
And same here. Brian, thanks for coming back on RCR. Really fascinating to hear what you had to say. Some great information there, some great knowledge sharing. Brian S. Hooker, PhD, Senior Director of Science and Research, Children's Health Defense, and Professor Emeritus Biology, Simpson University, Redding, California. Great to have you again, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.